Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We link to our guests, all of our guests. I've said it before, and I'll probably say it 100 times more, and that is that we do not reinvent the wheel. We send you via our portal, if you will, to our guests' websites, and have you check out the information that they have available for you. We ask you to check it out. If it resonates with you, wonderful. And there's a song that uses the lyrics, take what you need and leave the rest. Well, take what you need if it resonates with you. And if nothing does, well, then come back next week for our next guest. And the week after that and the week after that, we encourage you to do that. I have in studio, which is very nice, I have author John Norseman. He is the author of Journey of a Shaman. It is life, the journey, spirit, the destination. And John, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Now, I know that you are coming from San Francisco via Florida, but where do you originally hail from?
I come from Britain originally.
Okay.
And I live in Britain permanently, but spent the last 6 months on a book tour in the United States and Canada to promote the book, which was launched at the end of June in Indianapolis, but it's been covered nationally in the United States and Canada and Britain. So when I get back to Britain, I'll start promoting it in Britain.
Mm. And this, as you shared with me, this is a true story, this information and the activities, if you will, the journey is a true story. We've had guests who have written their books that are fictional in nature, but the content, the guidance, if you will, the different types of lessons that they learned were very real. So we're going to talk about that as well. And I guess I'd like to know from your perspective, what is a shaman?
There are many definitions, but the one I think sums it up most succinctly is a shaman is a man or woman who is a spiritual healer, spiritual teacher, and spiritual leader or guide. And in history, all the indigenous populations have had shaman. It's in the modern materialistic world that it still exists.
Right.
But it still exists very much with the Native Americans, the First Nation Canadians, the Maoris, South American indigenous peoples, and one can go on, and also, of course, Australian Aboriginals. Although I'm based in Britain, I have traveled the world, and I've lived and worked in Australia, New Zealand, and various other countries, and the United States and Canada. Mm. And so I'm multicultural, really. And I am continuing, has been going through the States in the last 6 months and Canada, to have a lot of meetings with Native Americans and First Nation Canadians. And it's been a two-way exchange of knowledge.
Well, I know that it is possible in this day and age to give oneself a title, to just take it on. You know, I mean, I could sit here and talk about, you know, all of my accolades, if you will. I'm an oracle, you know, I am a seer, I'm a guide, et cetera, et cetera. And I wouldn't do that because I don't know. I mean, I'm searching just like everybody else.
Exactly.
So how did you come to the title of shaman? And I know that that's what the book is about, and certainly we're going to get into that. But you know, in terms of, was this something you sought after?
No. It was something I resisted for a long time. It was a gradual process. I was always a practical intuitive, though I didn't acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
As I think one would say in America, I knew stuff. And I didn't know why. I didn't even question it.
Yeah.
And I went through a life. I was emotionally abused as a child. Mm. And then I had a period of finding ways to reestablish my self-esteem, to build my self-confidence. And that, in a way, I didn't realize it at the time, was part of the journey. And then the way I established the self-esteem I needed was to obtain the esteem of others through being successful in business. And even though I enjoyed it in a sense and was good at it, I knew it wasn't really me. I had to show to the world something I wasn't really. And that went on. And it was quite late in life, really, that I fully recognized what my destiny was. And even then I resisted it. I was first told that I was a shaman by a Maori woman in New Zealand, but I wasn't ready to hear it. She used the word kahuna, which is their word for it. Mm-hmm. And I also, while working in Australia, I met an Aboriginal, a male, who told me the same thing. I wasn't ready to hear it. Mm-hmm. But I never forgot it. And then the turning point was I met the woman who was to be my wife, and she was a very spiritual lady. And she convinced me and showed me the way as to what I should be doing. We got married, we were soulmates, and so having been successful in business, got a nice house, a business, I'd set up my own business after being in corporate life. Spirit, or whatever one wants to call the creator, mm-hmm. God, spirit. I use spirit in the book because it's non-denominational.
Yeah.
The book is written for all people. And I was guided by spirit to go on a journey and to sell our home, to sell my business, and to buy an ocean-going motor yacht.
Oh, wow.
I'd always been interested in boating.
Yeah.
But as a weekender. And it just felt right. And Carly, who features strongly in the book, my wife, totally agreed. And that was channeled on a Sunday afternoon in Devon. Mm. And we did it. It took a two-year period to dispose of our assets, to buy this 55-foot ocean-going boat, not a sailing boat, mm-hmm. and took 2 years also getting trained, both of us, in all the skills to cross the Atlantic Ocean. And we did it. Mm-hmm. People said, "You're crazy." Mm. But at the age of 66, we set sail. We'd retired and set sail, and the journey truly began. And then, after the first leg in Gibraltar, I had a massive wake-up call because I was enjoying myself too much.
Oh.
And spirit was telling me, "This is what you're meant to be doing." And I won't go into the detail, you have to read the book, but mm-hmm. I had the most massive wake-up call, life-changing experience.
So you have a strong affinity for the water, for the oceans.
Very strong, very strong. I need to be near water.
You and me both. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that we moved here.
Yeah.
I could have moved anywhere along the coast as long as there was ocean rolling up on the sand.
Yes, and that's why we, during our six-month book tour, that we chose Seattle.
Mm.
It's water everywhere.
Coming down as well as coming in, in the tides.
Yeah. And as a base, we didn't want to live out of a suitcase. Mm. So we took a six-month lease on a condo and then travel around doing book signings and interviews and everything else one needs to do to promote a book.
Now, you still have the boat?
Yeah, no, that was sold.
That was finally sold.
Yes,
okay.
That was finally sold.
But you're staying close to the water, obviously, from Miami to San Francisco to Santa Barbara to wherever the next
We live in Britain, which is Cornwall, a very remote part on a cliff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean
that
sticks 12 miles out to sea.
Yeah. I have to say that I've only flown through England to go to Ireland, which is my heart's desire to set up shop and live out the rest of my days there, continuing to do what I do. And I remember sitting on the edge of a granite stone slab off on the island of Inishmore in the Aran Islands, looking out over the North Atlantic. And I was probably, I don't know how many hundreds of feet above the water. And everybody else was just freaking out. And I just, I'm just looking, going, well, this is great. I mean, just, you know, a little high, you know, but it's, it was wonderful just being, you know, in connection with the water.
Exactly.
And then wherever we traveled, whether it was down to Waterford or Cork or down to some of the other coastal, southern coastal areas. So being close to the water, I can absolutely relate to that. You must have had a great drive up or down from San Francisco.
Absolutely. But I didn't quite reach the point of being able to share with everyone at the point where I knew I was destined to be a shaman and really started to do it with commitment. And that was the life-changing experience in Gibraltar.
Now, you had a teacher, a guide, a mentor, or is this all more intuitive?
No, it was many.
It was very physical,
it
human
was, it very human. Teachers. That's the whole point of the book. It's a very practical book. Mm-hmm. You can read it at many different levels. Mm-hmm. It's an adventure story. It's a love story. It's full of messages, practical messages, as to all the things people have to cope with in life. I've had a long life. And I'm still very fit and active. I've got many more years. But it's sharing that story. And it's just amazing how many people relate to that and they find it useful. How to change your life. So many people want to change their lives. And it was with having recognized it, was guided by spirit and learnt to go with the flow, not to try and go through a closed door. To close one door before you move in through a new one. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And on that journey, many guides were put in my way who taught me things and healed me of things I needed to be healed of. Not physical, but spiritual. And then I realized that I could do it for others. And so it was a four-year journey going round the Mediterranean, crossing the Atlantic Ocean. It's all fully covered in there. And getting to the United States and spending a year in the United States going around the coast. But on the way, I learned all the lessons needed. And the lessons are many, which people pick up from the book. It is amazing that people just approach my wife and I. And the biggest age group that approach us are in the age group 18 to 30.
Really?
There are so many wonderful young people out there. Mm-hmm. And they want more. They want to know how to change their lives and achieve self-actualization. And they'll just, my wife and I will be having coffee and they'll just come up and join us. And they'll talk. And so it's a book full of messages. So the shamanic journey started for real, in earnest, with my full knowledge after the life-changing experience. But it had been going on for many years. So it wasn't that I thought, I'll become a shaman. Mm-hmm. My destiny was to be one. Mm-hmm. And one cannot avoid one's destiny, but you have many choices how you get there.
And I guess that's one of the things that, in addition to people wanting to change their lives, they're wanting to understand what their life's purpose is.
Exactly.
And that is, for many, a very difficult, a very challenging question to answer.
Yes.
Because of the circumstances in which they live now, in the present moment.
Yes.
How could I be that when I'm this? There, where's the transition? Yeah. Where's the door or window?
It's doing things. Just a few checkpoints. We all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. The most self-growth thing is to turn a weakness into your greatest strength. It's to face your fears and to understand that courage is overcoming fear. Yeah. But most of all, that there's nothing that can stop you achieving anything you want to achieve. If you remove the blocks in your own mind, it's only the blocks there, subconscious blocks, put there by family, society, the culture you're in, or just a lack of self-confidence. Mm. To learn to say no and mean it from the heart. I never cease to be amazed how many people who've spoken to me, men, women, all ages, who've been abused in their lives in one form or another, and it's left scars, and how to overcome that. But there are just so many things. But really the final biggest message I learned, two messages. One was it's to learn forgiveness. And the book deals just by telling the story how to do that. And the lasting message, the thread that goes through it all, is that the greatest power for good, the most powerful, positive thing in the universe is love. And that is when one truly understands all these things, and from this true story, it's not theoretical, mm-hmm. It's not pious, it's a very earthy book. I made loads of mistakes in my life and learned from them and moved forward. Mm-hmm. And that is the appeal we're finding, and it's really motivated me highly that it's that the largest group of people, it spans all ages, but the greatest group is 18 to 30.
Mm. As a shaman, what is it that you have to offer? What is it that you do that you couldn't do just as, if I can put it in this context, just an ordinary man?
It's one can only write about, and the reason Spirit wanted me to write this book, or indeed very strongly guided me, was to get the message across to as many people as possible through the book. And that was the mission of the book. It wasn't something I wanted to do. It wasn't a thing I did for money. It was a thing because Spirit very strongly guided me. And in the end, I needed a big wake-up call to do that. So what I have to offer is practical experience and the ability to heal. And that's not because to be allowed to be steward or to have the stewardship of the gift of healing of a shaman, one has to have no ego. And one must just recognize one is merely a conduit from Spirit. Mm-hmm. That's all, a conduit, but one who can be trusted to use it to help people. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of practical experience, that's what it is. All of the indigenous populations had a great respect for the elders, the grey hairs who'd lived life, who had knowledge and experience to pass on.
Yeah.
And we find particularly that it's that age group again who are crying out for leadership and direction. And one of the things that I'm able to do is provide that. I never, ever tell people what they should do. I show them the framework by which they can reach their own decision that's best for them.
Mm, okay. So, in the process of beginning to accept your destiny, as it were,
Yeah. Okay,
and you still had a choice. You could have said, you know what, no, I want nothing to do with this, and gone on with your life as it was.
Yeah.
And you made the conscious choice to pursue it.
Yes.
Would you say that you needed to go through all of the challenges that you went through and do the things that you did that we might categorize as individuals assessing our lives, our past, as mistakes? They weren't really mistakes. You had to go through those.
Very much so.
In order to come out the other side and become the person that you are.
Exactly.
So there, I would think that there's sort of a bit of a mind shift that needs to take place, an awareness shift of the events in one's life.
Totally.
That you need to embrace what you were calling as mistakes as just events in your life that that tempered you, that gave you, as some people like to say, the character needed to move to the next step and the next step and so forth.
Very much so. And that is the process. Just to give an example, the thing I found most difficult and took the longest time was to forgive those that had abused me mentally. I was fortunate I was never physically abused, but I was mentally abused. And it took a long process over many years. And in fact, I will share, that person was my father. And it was a long process. It starts by forgiving, then a blessing, and then thanking that person for what they did, which is picking your point up exactly, Richard. Thanking them for what they did, because I wouldn't be who I am today if I hadn't had to overcome that.
Yeah.
It's iron being forged into steel by overcoming. And the fourth thing took years, 5 years after he died, because you can forgive without the person being alive, or if they are alive, right, you don't have to see them.
Right.
And this is what took me the longest time. And then it dropped on me one day before crossing the Atlantic to send him love from my heart. And when I did that, I was free. Mm. And the process of forgiveness is a crucial point in being able to let go of all the baggage.
Yeah.
Because there are always many people one meets in life who you need to forgive them. And sometimes you have to forgive yourself as well. And that's another thing one has to do.
And forgiveness isn't about releasing them, as far as I see it. It's about releasing self.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we as a society in particular, we're so bound up.
Yeah.
And we take offense so easily at the littlest things, especially if you're here in the West, if you're driving in traffic, you know. Yeah. And sometimes I find myself carrying that for miles.
Yeah.
It's way back there, and this person's gone. And the one thing I thought was real interesting, someone shared with me, those people, they did not wake up this morning planning to conspire against me to make my day difficult.
Exactly.
Any more than others conspired against them to make their day difficult.
No.
Or myself getting up and conspiring. Our awareness seems to shift and change. We allow ourselves to become distracted and do things that can, shall we say, offend, requiring forgiveness on our part to say, look, I understand. And I think that's the other thing that we might want to talk about as we continue is the way that technology and the social media, if you will, as the term has been coined over the years, we don't really know. The majority of the people that we connect with, whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn or Google or whatever the website is where you make these contacts and you friend them, you like them, you do this and that and the other, there's something missing there. And so we don't have that real connection to this person. And the same thing is true, like when we're driving on the highway. We don't really have a connection other than that event that we become irritated over, but we don't know that person. We don't know what's going on in their lives. And to me, that's an awareness that we need to work towards, is when something like that happens, saying, they must be having a bad day. So let's cut them some slack. Let's just let them go in peace. And then you don't have to deal with the issue of forgiveness.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're talking with John Norseman. He is the author of A Journey of a Shaman. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for staying with us as we continue talking with John Norseman. He is the author of Journey of a Shaman, and we're talking about this journey that he went on, not only sailing, but just the journey of becoming a shaman. And now you mentioned a timetable of what it was like 4, 5, 6 years. Oh, I know that the process is certainly, it's ongoing. I mean, you're a shaman now, but your teaching, in a sense, has not ended?
Exactly. That, for example, during this book tour, we've been traveling all over Canada and the United States, mainly in the United States. And in that process, people have been drawn to us. And we've found so many Native Americans and First Nation Canadians have done so. On the website, we do a blog about twice a week of all the interesting people we've met. And so it's a living story. And all the way along that track, it shows clearly that for everyone we meet, they get something, but we learn something. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way learning process. Everyone has wisdom. And the day one stops learning or is arrogant enough to think we know it all, which, Lord knows, I think the more experience I've had, the more I realize how much I don't know.
As the phrase goes, yes.
And we've had wonderful experiences. And so it's a living story over all age ranges, from teenagers, late teenagers, through to a lady who had admitted to being 91. She walked without a stick, came and joined us at a coffee table. There are plenty of other tables, and she ended up on our blog. And I asked her, I said, and she gave permission, this is on the blog. I said, Virginia, if you in a sentence with all your wisdom, and she was a professional musician when she was working, born in the days of the Great Depression. And to give to the young generation, in a sentence, what would it be? And she said, do what inspires you. And the blog we put on says, Virginia of Seattle says, do what inspires you. And we got so much reaction on Twitter because people could relate to how interesting people have this knowledge, this awareness, and equally very young people on there.
Yeah.
And just stories. And it is a two-way process. And just to extend what a shaman does, and I think different shaman probably do different things, because it depends on the need, their culture, where they're working, which nation they're in. That in my case, part of the work I do when it's necessary is to retrieve lost souls, to send trapped souls into the light, where it's relevant to heal issues that happened in a past life for someone that have been carried forward to this life without them being aware of it, mm-hmm. and actually manifest as physical problems in this life.
Yeah.
So a shaman can't heal a broken arm by spiritual healing. Mm-hmm. It is spiritual, but so much that is physical actually emanates from the spiritual. So it's a very wide range. And the other thing is, I never give advice. I wait till people ask me a question. If they've asked the question, it means they're ready to hear the answer.
Mm-hmm.
If I volunteer it, they probably are not ready to hear the answer.
Right.
Even though I might be able to see what the problem is. I will guide them in conversation to maybe ask me the question or to tell me what the information is that they want me to know. But it's very much people are put in my path because spirit wants that to happen. I actually believe there is no such thing as a coincidence.
I call them, I re-pronounce the word. It's called coincidence.
Yeah.
To coincide.
Yes.
I don't believe them in them either because there are reasons, even if we don't know what they are, why two paths cross, come together and are parallel for a while and then diverge.
There is always a meaning.
Yeah.
And it's always because somebody needs that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a wider meaning in the process. I learn something myself as well. It expands my knowledge. People, I have the gift that people find me approachable and will just come up to me and will come and sit at the table and just say, can I join you? Even though there are other empty tables around.
Yeah.
And there's always a reason for it. And there was something you raised earlier that I thought was very important. I'd like to just come back to that. In when I look back on my life, it was when you were saying that everything that happened to me was actually, I had to deal with it in order to become what my destiny was to become. When I look back on my life, I realize that everything that happened to me, everything I was guided to do, every lesson I had to learn was part of my training, so to speak, to be doing what I was meant to be doing. That because that's real life. And everybody has real life. And a lot of people have a lot of difficulty coping with what's going on, and they retreat into to negativity. And it's being positive. I show people, and I can give a practical demonstration through a thing called kinesiology of the power of a negative thought that actually reduces not only your immune system, but physically weakens you. And how one positive thought can negate tens of thousands of negative thoughts. And it's all about positive thinking. And there's so much negativity. People get into a negative downward spiral of thought.
Yeah.
And you see them walking around with downturned mouths and looking generally miserable. And so much of the guidance is because the positivity that comes from within me now, I wasn't always positive in my life, but the positivity I've learned that every day should be lived as if you know it's your last. And if you really live like that, every day is good.
Yeah.
Because there's good in every day. And everything is worth overcoming. And it can be overcome. And so it's a very wide range. It's not like saying, oh, how did you come to be a medical doctor? Well, you went through this, that, and the other, and it's because of this, that, and the other. The work of shamanism is completely open-ended. And I would think that every shaman is different and is capable of doing other things. And it's an ongoing learning process. And a lot of what I do is to do with the planet as well as people.
Planet can use a lot of help, let me tell you. Planet can use a lot of help. It's, to me, extraordinary to observe what's going on out in the world. And this kind of comes to a question that I've been grappling with, and somebody I met with not too long ago sharing some information with me. And we're talking about life's purpose and these kinds of things. And I said, you know, I really find it unnecessary, even though for the better part of my career, I have worked at news and information stations, to listen to the news. I feel that the names, the events, the locations, the time, the date, they all change. But these events have been going on since man's been on the planet. So why do I need to continue to fill my head and my heart with this stuff. I know this is going on. I'm not living some Pollyanna existence. This is, I don't want to hear about it because I don't want to believe that man is that cruel to man. I know that that's the case. I've seen it in my own personal life. I've seen it down through the early part of my life on the news and so on and so forth. Why do I need to continue to fill myself with that stuff? I would much rather, if I was going to watch television, I'd rather watch old comedies or even new comedies to laugh. Who was it? Wasn't it Norman Vincent Peale who was diagnosed with a terminal disease and they gave him 6 months and he said no. And he began watching, like, what was it, The Three Stooges? And I think that's who it was. And he beat the odds, I mean, by a long shot. And I put that question to this person I was chatting with. And I said, you know, why do I need to fill myself with that stuff? Again, I know that it's going on. So would you be asking that same question of others who do watch it and are monitoring it on literally a minute-by-minute basis, whether it be on Twitter or Facebook or whatever the news organization is on their on the internet or television or radio, would you kind of ask them the same kind of question? Why do you feel you need to be abreast of these things?
I could 100%. I was smiling as you did that because I do keep abreast on the big issues by reading, not every day, but three or four serious newspapers in different countries. Mm-hmm. Having lived in different countries, it's amazing how the media feed things with a certain spin on it. So I like to see what's happening in the big time. I haven't owned or watched a television, except occasionally watch someone else's television, for 15 years, because the news is so negative. I asked a journalist once, why are you always hammering the negative? He said, because good news doesn't sell newspapers.
Well, that's been the slogan.
Yeah, but, and it's true that people seem to feed on the disasters, and that creates negativity in them. Yes, it does happen. The best thing to do is to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And there are many people who are. And so I agree with you entirely that it is not good that people watch continual negativity. It depresses them and it paralyzes them. It's a matter of... Someone said to me a few years ago, they said, oh, how are you getting on with this, that and the other that you said you were doing 2 weeks ago? I said, I've done it. You've done it. I thought you were just talking about it. And so many people talk about it, but they don't walk the talk. And if they walked the talk, then they would feel empowered. But they don't.
Yeah. Again, it's going back to what you said earlier about doing what you are inspired to do.
Yeah.
And we get those inspirations all the time.
Yes.
What was it? I heard a statistic regarding million-dollar ideas, that every person on the planet has a million-dollar idea, if you will, every few minutes.
Yes.
But not many people move forward on it and make it happen until they see it and say, I thought of that. Why didn't I? You know, and now it's too late. And it's not always about the million-dollar idea, but it's more about us doing our part, if you will. I've talked with people about our roles in this life, not so much our purpose in life, as it were, but the fact that each of it, you have a purpose in life, you have a role, I have a role. They're not the same, okay? Yet, when we are conscious, when we are, shall we say, inspired to move forward, and we do so, our actions basically are in concert with the big picture, which we may not see. But it's only when we're in that inspired and aware and awake state, if you will, or some would even say in that zone, you know, that we begin to manifest things in our lives we never would have thought. I mean, I've been to Ireland twice in my life. I'm hoping to go again and never return, but I moved from my hometown in Phoenix to the West Coast, and I'd always wanted to, but never really put a lot of energy into where and what it would look like. You know, those kinds of, exercises that people give you for your, for manifesting, you know, visualizing where it is you want to be and how you want it to look and so forth. And I never really did a lot of that, but I've always found that I was in the right place at the right time, you know? Not, like I said, not really realizing that, oh, this is just the way it is.
I think that leads to the point that I wish I had a dollar every time I've said this to people.
Mm-hmm.
And people say that I found it in business and I found it in the spiritual work afterwards. That you're talking to someone where they have a crossroads in their life. Let's just talk the spiritual for a moment.
Okay.
And we all have crossroads that are put before us where one has to make a decision. I say these are opportunities. They've been put in your way, but you have free choice.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point is we have personal choice in life. And so I say, right, you've got this path, which is the new one, and you've got that path, which is carrying on as you are. And you go through it all. And they said, well, I don't think I'm ready to make a decision. I said, you just have.
Mm-hmm.
You've made the decision to do nothing. No, I haven't. I'm carrying on as I am. I said, look, a piece of advice I would give you is get a piece of paper and write down, as you see it, the positives and negatives of continuing on the path you're on and the positives and the negatives of this new path. And of course, the new path means change. It means letting go of some of your paradigms, letting go of some of your mindsets, letting go of maybe relationships, maybe changing your job. Now, the problem with being in human body, even though we're spiritual beings, is that we are programmed to dislike change.
Mm-hmm.
But if you make the decision to stay as you are, by all means, make that decision. That has to be your decision. But you have made a decision. And that's one of the most difficult things people seem to find to get their minds around. That in some way by staying, and that's why people stay in bad relationships when it'd be better not to, mm-hmm. or a job that makes them unhappy, when they go home and on Sunday night they're almost in tears because they have to go in to work on Monday and they hate their jobs. And yet it's what they know.
Yeah.
And that's happened to me in life, of course. Big crossroads. But I learn more and more to view each one as a decision where you've really made a decision, whichever one you do. And you get lots of chances if you don't make the decision to be put in your path again. But in the end, the opportunities run out. And I think a lot of people end up with unhappy, disappointed lives, because they've never made the difficult decision to change.
I know that I had a year back in 2000 where I went through the process of being laid off from 4 different jobs in 1 year. A lot of people don't get laid off that often in a lifetime. I got it done in a year, so to speak. But I never looked at any of them. Now, it was funny, too, because the first 2 times, I would go to the state unemployment office and file for unemployment, right? And you have to wait 2 weeks, and you've got to be looking for work. And by the end of the 2 weeks, I had found the next job. So I didn't collect the check the first time, and then the second time, I did it again. So the 3rd and 4th times that I was laid off, I didn't even bother. I figured, I'm going to get a job in a couple of weeks. It's not going to matter. And just kept moving forward. And it was that experience. And then, of course, the job that propelled me here, that basically said that, number one, you don't have to wait for these jobs to end to make changes in your life.
Exactly.
Okay. That was probably the biggest lesson. But number two, you don't need to be afraid of whether or not your employment lasts or not. Because everything that you're doing up to that point where it may very well end, you are sort of laying the groundwork for the next step in your life. And it actually ties into teaching people in my chosen profession. All of the things that I know, passing that on. Because if I don't, and I hold on to it greedily saying, I don't want anybody else to know this, because if they know this, then they can do what I'm doing. But I learned very early on that if I do that, then I can't go on and do other things. Mm. I get stuck. Mm. You made a very interesting point, too, about people getting stuck in their jobs. And in 2008-09, especially here in the United States, thousands of people lost their jobs. And my first thought was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs. And that the universe basically opened up this scenario to allow them that opportunity of choosing a different path. Mm-hmm. Some of them may have, some of them may not have. But it's what we talk about in terms of giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. I use the analogy of a fog-laden road, and you're able to look down maybe 3 or 4 or 5 feet in front of you, and you can see the shoulder, and they just say, stay to the right, and just keep on going. And that's fine. All of a sudden, the fog lifts, and like your example, you see a path off to the left. Now you have an opportunity to make a choice. And as you very well said, even if you stay on the path you are on, you've still made a choice. Mm. And we all have them at every stage in our lives, regardless of where we are, who we are, or what we're doing. We can make choices. Mm. That can never be taken away. Mm. And to me, that's something that I think that we really need to, I don't know if it can be taught.
Mm. I think if people are shown how it can work in a practical way, mm-hmm. so many books are written on the subject of how to do this that are theoretical.
Yeah.
In a way, it's like history. I found when I was in business, probably the best management textbooks you could read are history. To see how human beings reacted, like so many companies are run like the court of King Henry VIII. And if you understand that, you realize why. So if you look at that, it's understanding people's emotions.
Yeah.
And what I tend to say to people, not in terms of encouraging them to just change for the sake of it, when they're really, I hate this, or I hate that, or et cetera, et cetera. I say, look, if you don't like what you're doing, do something else.
Yeah.
But don't just think about it. Make a plan.
Yeah.
First decide what is it you want to do. Mm-hmm. Think about your hobbies, mm-hmm. the things you enjoy doing for not being paid. Think about that. Why don't you maybe look at that? Can you make a living doing that? Mm-hmm. And there was a lady we came across who was in a job she absolutely hated. And she loved photography. She was an excellent photographer. We said, well, why don't you do that? Be a wedding photographer. You're lovely with people. And she's now thinking of doing that because you don't need capital to set up as a wedding photographer if you're really good.
Right.
And it's very often, and I've seen this in friends and people I've known, that often when they retire and they're not having to work for money anymore, but they don't want to be bored, so they start doing as a sideline something they enjoy, and they suddenly become more successful and make more money than they ever did because they're doing something they really enjoy instead of something that's a burden.
I think, too, that the other aspect of that is as well that you don't have to wait for the job to go away or to quit it. You can do it while you're working where you are now.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, that can be more advantageous. You still have the income from the other job, and you get to look forward to each day or how often you choose to do it. You get to look forward to doing that which you are inspired to do.
Exactly. And when I wrote Journey of a Shaman, it wasn't because I thought I'd write a book. Mm-hmm. I was very strongly guided to do it. And it was to inspire others and self-help and motivation. But a book that can be read at many different levels, from the very spiritual person already to the person who is just open-minded. And that is all that we're talking about, is about helping people to take control of their own lives and to find the ultimate goal, in my view, mm-hmm. which is inner peace, or peace of mind, whichever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And that's a complex process and very personal to each person. Each of us human beings are like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
We're unique.
Yeah.
And therefore the needs and what satisfies and gives each of us peace of mind is different. And it's helping people to identify that ultimate goal. Throughout my life, I've observed that what people are really looking for is peace of mind. And very few people have it.
I can attest to the fact that I have it on occasion, but it's not a consistent thing. And I'm still working on that. Mm. Every morning when I take my wife to her job, and she works in the cardiovascular department of the local Sansom Clinic here in Santa Barbara, I go upstairs with her and I weigh myself because I'm trying to keep my weight down. Mm-hmm. Because I'm trying to keep my high blood pressure in check. And so we check it every day. And I keep a record of it on my phone. I have a little memo that I add to it each day. And I can tell you, I don't have a problem sharing this. Yesterday, for example, it was like, 163 over 94. Now, I'm taking my meds, mind you. But obviously, there's something going on in my mind, okay, that's pushing this up. And I thought yesterday I was actually kind of excited about the prospects of Thanksgiving and the holidays coming up and all of this kind of thing. And then today we go in and take it again, and it's only 132 over 80-something or other. So it's down. And the thing that I have to remember and not take each reading so seriously is your blood pressure is supposed to fluctuate as you go through your day and you experience whatever it is that you experience. That's normal. And that's something that I wish that I could get across, for example, to my physician. How do you know that my blood pressure isn't supposed to ride up in this general area? Okay. Now, obviously, if it gets to a point where you think it's, you know, maybe if it's 200 over 130, okay, we need to do something. But as you just said, we're all unique. We're like fingerprints. Mm. And each one of us has a different metabolism. Mm. We have a different emotional makeup. Mm-hmm. We have a different intellect. Mm. We have a different spiritual outlook. And I've observed this. I'd love for you to expand on this a little bit. I kind of theorized this many years ago that this aspect of the uniqueness. When a child is born, a lot of times what you'll hear from the relatives as they're gazing upon this new infant that's entered the world, that they have Aunt Millie's ears or Uncle Bob's smile, or, and again, they start listing off all these attributes. And as the child grows and begins showing temperament, they start to attribute their behavior, for example, to different relatives, ancestors, right? And the same thing with as they go into school and they start to show a particular aptitude towards a particular subject, the same kinds of things, even though they're the individual, you know. And I thought, wouldn't that still also be true to some degree with our spiritual lives? Hmm. That we are, I don't know that much about DNA. I know that it's just information. It's data that helps to construct the being that we become. But that DNA was created from our parents and their parents and their parents, going back as far as one can figure. And in that sense, yes, we are unique. I just wonder what it is that makes us unique individuals beyond the combination of all of those attributes from the ancestors.
I would give one answer to that.
Please.
Your soul.
So the soul is unique to the individual physical being.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I can accept that. I can accept that. And that would make sense.
Because I really do believe, and this isn't original, but I really believe that that the eyes are the window to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it doesn't matter what people look like or anything else. But you look in the eyes and you see the soul.
Mm.
And that is the uniqueness, that is the beauty of a human being.
Mm.
And then the rest is behavior. I know there's the personality, and there is behavioral things. People can change behavior if they want to.
Sure.
And we sometimes go off track. But what you said about the uniqueness is that each soul is unique.
Yeah. One of the things that you talked about earlier in terms of your travels and your desire to be close to the ocean and getting this wonderful boat that you traveled on for, what, 6 months or more,
several years? No, 4 years.
4 years, that's right.
Lived aboard for 4 years, left Southampton in England, got to Gibraltar, went round the Med, crossed the Atlantic, all sorts of adventures and all sorts of things went on there, including huge spiritual lessons, America and back to the UK.
There's a part of me that envies you that experience and would love to have that experience, but I have one for myself, and I've actually sort of kind of planned it out. My wife and I want to get a motorhome, and we'd outfit it with a small little studio, and we'd travel.
Mm.
And I figured out that it is possible to pretty much travel the entire world in the motorhome. Let's say you started down at the tip of South America, and you come up through the Americas, and through Canada and Alaska, and then across the Bering Strait, and we'd have to do it in the winter when it's iced over, and then into Asia, the Asian countries and Russia and the Middle East and India and so forth. We'd have to do something about Australia and New Zealand. I don't know how we'll figure that one out. But anyway, and then work your way across Europe and into England, and then, of course, over to Ireland. You know, as sort of the final destination, if you will. You've pretty much covered the entire planet without having to really, get out into, circumnavigate the water.
And there's no reason why you can't.
Yeah. And I've thought about that, and I thought, because I want to come across, I'd have difficulty getting in touch with you because you're moving around all the time. But there are people in their little villages and their little hamlets, in their corners of the world, where they're doing what you're doing, if you will, on a much smaller level to make a better life for themselves, the people around them, their community, and so forth. Those are the people that I think that we'd really want to reach and share that with the rest of the world, saying, look, it's not impossible. Look at what these people are doing. And they've never read any of the self-help books and the guidance books. They're just doing it out of sheer intuition.
But people would love reading your blogs, first of all, because it's inspirational that you've done that.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, wow, I've taken off. I've done this.
Yeah.
It's not just a holiday. And also, it would be so interactive. What people, I find, love is the true stories of daily happenings and sharing and the inspirational aspects that occur.
And those positive stories.
And very positive stories.
Yeah.
There's no reason you can't do that.
Yeah.
And that is, in a way, one of the primary lessons of the book that I was asked, because I'm asked to write a lot of articles for magazines and so on. And one of them was about how you gave up corporate life and you went and did something completely different.
Yeah.
And how did you do it? Well, I just say read the book.
Yeah, well, that's...
It's a series of, it's not theory, and people can then adapt it because it's not saying this is what you should do.
Right.
It's just saying this is what I did.
Yeah.
And boy, did I make a lot of mistakes on the way. But the thing is to learn from it.
Yeah. And you take it, you modify it for your life.
To grow.
Yeah.
And to have that self-confidence, not in an egotistical sense, but the self-confidence. I was approached by a bellboy in one of the hotels we stayed in recently, because everyone in the hotels knows because of all the stuff going on that I've written this book and on a book tour. And he asked a question. He came up and said, what is it about? And I said, it's to show you can do anything you want to do if you really, and it's a true story, but it hopefully will inspire you. Mm. He said, well, do I have to believe in shamanism to do this? Mm. I said, no. You only have to believe in yourself.
Yeah, that's it. That's all there is. John, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and I encourage people to go out and pick up a copy of Journey of the Shaman, Journey of a Shaman. John Norseman has been my guest, and I wish you safe travels. I still have three more questions to ask you, but again, I thank you so much for sharing your story with us and joining us in studio.
Thank you.
Final three questions are, who is John Norseman?
You mean, who is the real me?
Whatever you feel inspired to answer.
Oh. someone who was honored to be given a life with lots of challenges that began in World War II as a war baby. Went through that, which is covered with many traumas. Led a rich life and given many opportunities and challenges and tests that at times seemed insurmountable. There was one period in my life when I felt I couldn't go on. I had a particularly traumatic experience. And I said to Spirit, Spirit, I feel I do not have the strength to carry on. And the answer came immediately. You have the strength. And I felt it, I feel it now coming up. I felt I had the strength, picked myself up and carried on. And I think all of us have the strength. Mm-hmm. We all have the strength. We just have to have the confidence that we have it. Mm-hmm. And that's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to help as many people as possible to enrich their lives and achieve whatever it is they want to achieve, to give them inner peace of mind. I'd like them to understand how to say no and mean it from the heart, so they change the energy so they can be themselves. So many young people have said to me, I want to work to live. I don't want to live to work. And I say, that's a good goal. And then would discuss what that should mean for them. And also the planet, that part of the shamanistic work is, and the thread of all the shamanistic history and peoples, including the Native Americans, is that they respect, truly respect, the sea, the rivers, the mountains, the land. Truly respect it, and that's part of my belief system. That's who I am. And it's the desire to do what Spirit wants me to do, and each day I ask and check, how am I doing, boss? Okay, please guide me.
Yeah.
And that's an ongoing journey. I'm told I still have a long life left, and I'm now 74.
Mm.
And people think I'm much younger. So I want to keep on doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And that's who I am.
And though you may have answered this question in some fashion throughout the program that we've been doing today, I ask that directly, what is your life's purpose?
I'm feeling the power of spirit going through my body now. It's like electricity. Mm. My life's purpose, is this on air?
We're recording.
All right. My life's purpose is to prepare as many people as possible to be self-sufficient to cope with what's coming. Mm. And to be part of the reconstruction.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. Mm. I will not pursue that at this point in time. Maybe another time we'll get into that. But again, I thank you so much. And I'm excited about the fact that you made the trip all the way down from San Francisco. I guess you're headed back that way and are going to continue your book tour and talking with people about the lessons you've learned through what you've written in A Journey of a Shaman. And again, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Norseman has been my guest. His website is just that, johnnorseman.com. That's johnnorseman.com. You can find out about both the book and all of the other things. You can read his blog and get more information about the work that he's doing. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.